I strongly welcome this move, and they should do more to bring more people who needed asylum or more of their safe places, especially in Australia.
A new safe haven for Myanmar nationals. It's Friday, May 7th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, India's diaspora watching COVID's rage. Afghanistan's Abdullah Abdullah speaks with us. Trump's Facebook message to other world leaders. Asian Americans defend themselves. Online home organization. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Australia is offering Myanmar nationals living there a safe haven. Canberra has said it will extend their temporary visas until it is safe for them to return home following February's military takeover. Phil Mercer in Sydney has more.
Canberra has been under pressure to offer a haven to more than 3,300 Myanmar citizens in Australia. More than half of them are students, and their visas will be extended. Many have said they fear persecution or arrest if they return home to a country scarred by weeks of civil unrest after the military in Myanmar ousted the elected government of de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. However, it's not clear how long Australia will extend visas for or how it will determine whether and when it's safe for Myanmar nationals to return home. Tozor Lat, the operations director for the Democratic Voice of Burma, a non-profit media organization, said he welcomes the decision to allow them to stay.
I think it is a right move for Australian government to extend visa. It's like in U.S. and, you know, it's about many places, especially overseas student visa is a grant extension. I strongly welcome this move, and they should do more to bring more people who needed asylum or more of their safe places, especially in Australia. I think this is in the right direction.
In Canberra, Immigration Minister Alex Hawke said in a statement that Australia continued to strongly urge the Myanmar security forces to exercise restraint and refrain from violence against civilians, release those detained arbitrarily, and engage in dialogue. Meanwhile, Australia's Home Affairs Department has launched an investigation into relatives of Myanmar's military living in Australia. There are concerns they are either harbouring assets taken from Myanmar or receiving financial support from the military in Myanmar following February's uprising. News reports have suggested that more than 20 family members of senior officials of Myanmar's new military government were living in Australia. Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy Party won a landslide victory in an election in November with more than 80% of the vote. She was placed under house arrest in February following the military takeover. The Southeast Asian nation, also known as Burma, became independent from Britain in 1948. It was controlled by a harsh military government from 1962 to 2011. Australia has suspended military assistance to Myanmar and redirected aid to non-government organisations. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Civil society groups urge United Nations arms embargo on Myanmar. India doctor makes desperate plea for oxygen as pandemic supplies dwindle. G7 countries back Taiwan's observer status in World Health Assembly. China's Africa outreach poses growing threat, according to U.S. General. Pfizer, BioNTech to donate coronavirus vaccines to Olympians. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found online at Facebook at VOA Asia and our website, voanews.com. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The Indian diaspora living in the United States is watching in horror as India battles a devastating surge of COVID-19. We hear more with VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo.
For Indians living in America, the daily crush of dark news from the homeland is a reminder that the pandemic is far from over. Virginia resident Varsha Mehta.
It's heartbreaking. They don't have beds. People are laying. There is 4,000 people are dying every day, you know. And it's an unbelievable situation.
Indian Americans say the world's largest democracy was not adequately prepared.
India's infrastructure is just not built to handle something like this, just given overcrowding and the amount of people crammed into just small spaces at all times. And I think once the first wave kind of settled down, it was, I mean, like across the world, it was this sense of, okay, back to normal. But I mean, everybody experienced the second wave in some sense, and it's just hitting India a lot harder.
I definitely have, like, elders in my family who've gotten vaccinated or at least gotten first dose, but you can definitely tell that they hasn't been efficient enough. And you could say that that's the fault of the government, probably, to not, you know, be devoted to committing and getting the resources that they need before, you know, lifting all these restrictions and saying that, you know, COVID is not in India right now. It'll be fine.
With over 20.2 million cases, India has the second highest number of COVID-19 infections behind the United States and the third highest number of deaths behind the U.S. and Brazil. Tuesday, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters the United States is continuing to send aid to the hard-hit South Asian nation.
Six air shipments funded by USAID have departed the United States, five of which have already arrived in India. These flights include health supplies, oxygen supplies, N95 masks, rapid diagnostic tests, and medicine. And these are a lot of the components that the Indian government has expressed a vital need for. More flights are on the way, with total assistance expected to exceed 100 million.
But for many, the aid may be too late. Michigan resident Kalpana Bakad notes the impact on her family in India.
I have lost an aunt. I have lost a sister-in-law to COVID. And we have had many members of our family who have, who have been impacted by COVID, and they have recovered, luckily, you know. It's real.
The Indian diaspora in the U.S. is doing its part to raise money and help ease the suffering of so many. Indian-American Chandru Asharia of Michigan.
This is one time that the entire Indian-American community has come together and is pouring, the kind of support that you see for the situation back in India is extraordinary.
For the more than 4 million people of Indian descent in the U.S., a dichotomy of sorts as vaccinations increase in the U.S. and the pandemic rages on an ocean away. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, prominent Hong Kong pro-democracy activist Joshua Wong has been sentenced to 10 additional months in prison for taking part in an unauthorized assembly last year to commemorate the 1989 Tiananmen Square crackdown. The 24-year-old Wong is already serving a 13-and-a-half-month sentence. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We've made it to the end of the week. Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. The United States and its NATO allies have officially begun withdrawing their remaining forces and equipment from Afghanistan. Abdullah Abdullah, the chairman of Afghanistan's High Council for National Reconciliation, discussed the implications for Afghanistan's peace process and the future of the country in part two of a conversation with VOA's Ayesha Tanzim.
There are two competing proposals, one by you, one by President Ghani. Which one is it that you will take to Istanbul?
No, I wouldn't call it two competing proposals. I will say that the main elements of what has been talked about is the same. Peaceful settlement, yes. End state based on one person, one vote, yes. How to get from here to there? There are different scenarios that we can discuss it. We can put it on the table, not as two conflicting views, but something that we can negotiate, each one of them.
Are you saying that you're taking both proposals to Turkey?
No, I mean, the whole thing is that the purpose of getting there in Turkey is to agree to at least to have some understanding beforehand with the Taliban.
So you're saying that there should be some pre-agreement before going to Istanbul. There should be some understanding with the Taliban because it needs to be a meaningful conference.
Some understanding.
Who's doing that negotiation right now?
The conveners are talking to the Taliban as well as us.
So Qatar.
They used to. It's the UN, it's Qatar, it's Turkish government, their representatives, and also the United States, which has been involved in it. The support group, the facilitating countries like Germany, Norway, Uzbekistan, Indonesia, these countries are also behind the scene. They are active.
Is there any contact right now between the Afghan negotiation team and the Taliban?
Or no, at this stage, no.
You're saying the conveners are talking to Taliban. Are there any indications of what the Taliban want? Have they shared any proposal, any idea of what their version of peace looks like?
They leave their position very vague, very general. We want the establishment of Islamic system. What is that Islamic system? How the leaders will be elected or selected? They say that there needs to be an Islamic council. So is it elected Islamic council? If it is elected, on what basis? All these things are vague. They have not opened their heart in that regard.
The Taliban have sent a letter to a lot of politicians, you included in that list. What is in that letter?
The point is that different groups of Taliban, they make contact with the leaders. Sometimes they send some notes. It's mainly, I've checked with the others as well, the messages are mainly the same. Even there, their position is very vague. And you don't know if there's a position of one group versus another. But again, they talk about the Islamic system, they talk about unified Afghanistan and all of that. That nobody disputes that. But nothing, no clarity whatsoever.
Do you think the Taliban want peace?
I hope. I wish. And I hope. Because otherwise the war will continue.
And if negotiations fail, which is the worst fear of some Afghans, do you fear a civil war?
We cannot rule out that scenario, that the situation will get very difficult for the people and the war will continue. My point is that at this stage, the Taliban have not said that they are not talking. Let's not lose hope because it will be a worst case scenario should it happen. So at this stage, the whole focus should be on how to make it work.
Thank you very much for your time again.
You're welcome. Good. Thanks.
Abdullah Abdullah, chairman of Afghanistan's High Council for National Reconciliation, speaking in Kabul with VOA's Ayesha Tanzim.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia, the shadow government of ousted former lawmakers in Myanmar has formed an armed militia aimed at opposing the military junta that seized control of the country in a coup February 1st and killed more than 760 people who protested against the army takeover. This and more on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We have much more to come on VOA Asia, but first, Facebook's oversight board on Wednesday upheld the social media company's decision to ban former U.S. President Donald Trump from posting comments to his Facebook and Instagram accounts, a measure imposed after he posted incendiary remarks as hundreds of his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. The quasi-independent panel, however, left open the possibility that Trump could eventually return to the popular website and gave Facebook executives 6 months to re-examine the, quote, arbitrary penalty it imposed the day after the insurrection. The decision sends a signal to world leaders everywhere that to use social media, they have to play by a set of rules that are still forming. Tina Trin has more.
For world leaders and other VIPs who use Facebook and social media, the recent decision by the quasi-independent Facebook Oversight Board about former President Donald Trump is supposed to send a message.
The same rules that apply to all Facebook users should also apply to influential users. Influential users should not be judged against a separate set of rules.
But the decision raises more questions about what exactly those rules are and what it means for world leaders who want to get their message out, putting a harsh spotlight again on tech's power over online speech.
We will never give up.
This week, the board, made up of journalists, activists, and lawyers, said that the social networking giant made the right call when it suspended Trump after the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol in January, but erred in making the ban indefinite. The board gave Facebook 6 months to make a final decision on Trump's account. Facebook said it would carefully review the board's recommendations.
Facebook had sort of punted the decision to the oversight board, putting Trump in an indefinite suspension and kind of leaving it to the oversight board to make the final call. But the oversight board is punting right back to Facebook and saying, no, this is on you. You need to clarify your policies and then decide whether this man meets them or not.
The board wrestled with the complex interplay between free speech and protecting people, said M. Alonzo.
In international human rights law, there is strong protection for freedom of expression for everyone, but there's also a recognition that some kinds of speech can actually lead to real-world violence.
There's been mixed reaction to the decision, with conservative lawmakers in the U.S. criticizing Facebook for keeping Trump off, and others saying he should have been permanently banned. Trump didn't address the decision, but criticized technology companies on his new site Wednesday. One thing that should change, the board said, is making exceptions for world leaders whose postings, no matter how inaccurate or controversial, are deemed newsworthy because of their political standing.
This idea of a newsworthiness allowance, that things may be justified to be said on Facebook because they're newsworthy, we're saying if there's ever a balance, it has to be towards keeping people safe.
The vast majority of politicians in this world don't need these exceptions because they are not trying to undermine democracy or they are not trying to demonize entire communities.
The board's decision is a step closer to creating stronger rules, important especially when Facebook is operating in places with fragile democracies, said Wendy Fai.
They need to take a careful look at those policy recommendations because civil society and our own organization has been saying the exact same thing for so long, and it has been ignored, with the result being death and damage to democracies. They have their values. They need to live up to them.
Now that the ball is back in Facebook's court, political leaders, influential people, and its 2.8 billion users worldwide will have to wait and see if the social network makes changes. Tina Trin, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, media advocates and international partners of Afghanistan have denounced the Taliban insurgency for threatening local journalists for allegedly not being impartial in their reporting of the country's long war. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a community of Asian Americans and their allies in Los Angeles are offering free self-defense classes. Volunteer trainers hope to equip people with skills that could save them from the rising violence against Asians in the United States. We hear more from our correspondents in Thailand.
Someone's right here. He's grabbing them.
Akemi Luk is one of the students interested in free self-defense classes taught by professional instructors who volunteer at the Pan Pacific Park in Los Angeles.
Do you try to pull them down with those hands? Because I already feel her pulling me a little hard.
She hopes the techniques will be helpful when it's necessary, as many Asians have been targets of violence.
So if we get attacked, we have to know how to fight back. We have to know the techniques
and we have to know how to protect ourselves.
Geisha Colton is a single mother who has survived a sexual assault. Like Luke, Colton hopes that learning self-defense is a preemptive step.
I don't want to have to ever be in that position where I have to learn how to protect my own life if I'm being attacked. But obviously, because of the world we live in, it's unfortunately a reality for all people, especially now for Asian, especially for women. Women are always, you know, we're always going to be vulnerable for attacks.
Even with my arms, I can still do this. I can grab and squeeze.
Sabrina Johnson and Alexandra Bernal volunteered to teach the self-defense class. Although they are not of Asian descent, they feel that it's important to use their expertise in helping other people combat violence against Asians.
And I think as an ally, if you're not Asian yourself, but you see someone being attacked that's Asian or of any race, if you know self-defense, you could intervene. You could have the confidence to tell that person harassing them, like, hey, stop bothering that person.
Trainers say they will continue to offer classes like this for the Asian American community, hoping they will empower people to combat a rise in discriminatory attacks. For Supakit Patrathiranon in Los Angeles, Noprat Chaichala Mongkon, VOA News.
During coronavirus-mandated lockdowns, millions of people began following the so-called cleanfluencers, online bloggers who inspired others to clean and organize their homes while gaining useful knowledge about keeping things neat and tidy. Nina Vishneva has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
These videos are not blockbusters or murder mysteries, but it's hard to take your eyes off these clips. Cleaning videos have gotten especially popular during the pandemic. Cleanfluencers, who are passionate about cleanliness and organizing living spaces, post their homes' transformations online and inspire others to do the same.
Today we are going to be doing a whole house clean with me. I always love how good it feels just to get the entire house clean from top to bottom, and I feel like it stays cleaner a lot longer.
Amanda Page from Utah started filming cleaning videos after her third son was born.
I had really bad postpartum depression after having him, and so I just kind of needed an outlet, and so I started the channel as a hobby, and then soon enough, like, it just started growing, and just the response from it was incredible.
Amanda's husband joined her in her cleaning hobby, and their three kids, though small, help as much as they can. Today, their YouTube channel, called This Crazy Life, has over 300,000 subscribers.
Oh, we supposed to clean our washing machine? Listen, don't judge me. I never knew that. Ooh, that one dirty.
Cleaning shower drains, removing mold from the washing machine, the more disgusting it sounds, the more views the video is likely to get. People like watching others do cleaning. The videos are both absorbing and soothing for the psyche, according to researchers.
Repeatedly watching such videos, we begin to associate these videos with how they make us feel. So they make us feel relaxed, calm, satisfied.
Mitchell Creed is a neurologist. Some 8 years ago, he created a thread on Reddit called Oddly Satisfying, filled with videos like that. In no time, he had 6 million followers. And after the coronavirus pandemic struck, cleaning videos became even more popular, giving people an outlet when they found themselves confined to their homes.
People were staying inside for months on end, and they got to clean their house.
On TikTok alone, short clips with the hashtag cleaning got over 8 billion views in 2020. Other social platforms have shown similar results.
Homemaking can just be a really mundane job, and it can be lonely sometimes. And so I think kind of watching someone go throughout their daily life like that gives you a sense of community, and it just kind of lets you know that you're not alone.
Amanda Page believes the popularity of cleaning videos will outlive the pandemic. For Nina Vishnyova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That tidies up our program for the day and for the week. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back at the same time again Monday. In the meantime, follow us online at Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. We also thank those who help bring the program to you, our service chief, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.